Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it off.
I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Minions, you know what that siren means. It's time for The Balance. My name is Sal Marquis, El Presidente. I am your boss, your leader, the man who's going to guide you through the next 2 hours of sports at a very high rate of speed. You better buckle up. You better get ready because this is The Balance. My name is Sal Marquis, El Presidente. 917-889-8516 is my digits. If you'd like to jump in the conversations that we will have today, feel free to call in, pay homage to me, and then I will be glad to talk with you about whatever you want to talk about. But the topics of today is, of course, we have a race. It is race day here in Indianapolis, and it's the month of May. And here's the great thing about it. It is not the Indianapolis 500. Not that the Indianapolis 500 is not great, but this race today is what we call the Indianapolis Grand Prix, the first inaugural race. I'm excited. Can you feel it? Can you feel the excitement? The road course out there, the oval course out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has been turned in and transformed to a road course, and it is going to be exciting. It is going to be exciting. Race cars on the track all day long. Right after this show, we'll be out there. And certainly, you can follow us at Indian May, at T-Balance, at Pro Indy. We've got you covered from every turn. Rich Nye, the sports guy from WTHR Sports, is going to join us and talk with us about this magnificent race that's going to take place today out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the first Indianapolis Grand Prix. And I, myself, you know, and here's the thing. This month of May, if you like road courses or if you like oval, that's great because it's all in the month of May here in Indianapolis. That's right. 11 o'clock, the USF 2000 race number 2. 12:10, the Pro Mazda race number 2. 1:30, the Indy Lights race number 2. And at 3:50, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis begins the very first one, 82 laps. We should get it in with no problem, no problem with the weather. It's going to be a great day to go racing. You ready to go racing? Let's go racing, my friends. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We'll be right back right after this with Rich and I, the sports guy.
Catch me. I'm on the run. I'm that open road. It sets me free. I'm on the run. I can feel the wind beneath my wings. I'm on the run.
Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
The echoes, the legends, the hearts and souls of champions, all will take notice as a new tradition ignites. The inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis. New twists, new turns, new thrills. Grand Prix of Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our story begins now.
Race fans, get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day Concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/...
You know, after a long day here at the Balance Radio Studios, one of the things I like to do most is just to sit back, relax, and enjoy a nice cigar and a great cocktail. One of my favorite places to do that is Mr. B's Cigar Box in Avon, Indiana. Mike and Tom have the setup for you there. I'm going to tell you what, they've got a walk-in humidor, cigars, pipes, tobacco, the way you like it. You like it mild, they got it for you. You like it strong and bold, they got something for you. They got a fully stocked bar with local drafts, a very relaxing lounge, a full-service kitchen with a delicious, delicious menu, monthly cigar tasting events. You can play Golden Tee for free. Bring your laptop, relax with a nice cigar and the cocktail the way you like it. Mr. B's Cigar Box in Avon, Indiana. Mr. B's Cigar Box is the place you want to go to unwind. Mr. B's Cigar Box in Avon, Indiana. Very easy to find. 8123 East U.S. Highway 36 in Avon, Indiana. That's 8123 East U.S. Highway 36 in Avon, Indiana. 317-272-6900. The guys out at Mr. B's Cigar Box are waiting for you. What are you waiting for?
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports. March, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
All right, welcome back to the Balance. My name is Saul Mark Wassell, Presidente. It is so good to have you back along, and I tell you what, today is race day, and I'm not referring to the Indianapolis 500, but I am referring to a big race out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Exciting time it is. It's going to be the first of many Grand Prix of Indianapolis is to come. Joining my partner in crime is the redneck from Philly, Mr. Kevin Chapman, and also it's my pleasure and great esteem to have our next guest, friend of the show, Rich Nye, the sports guy from WTHR Sports, who is going to break it down and make us all more knowledgeable. The great and powerful Rich Nye, the sports guy. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing quite well. Good morning.
Hey man, are you ready for some race day?
I am ready. I'm ready for four races today, actually. As you go out to the speedway, not only will you get to see the first ever Grand Prix of Indianapolis, but for the first time they've brought the support series, the ladder system, if you will, that leads up to IndyCar to the speedway as well, so you can see the USF 2000 drivers, the Pro Mazda drivers, and the Indy Lights drivers. And I think that's important and significant. I know some people complain that, you know, hey, these guys haven't earned their way to Indianapolis. They shouldn't be driving on hallowed ground yet. But I think it's really important because I think there's a lot of people out there that don't even know these other series besides Indy Lights exist, and that there is a structure in place for a young person who wants to get to IndyCar to come up the system, and for IndyCar to try not to lose so many drivers to NASCAR along that support system road.
Well, we're also joined, and absolutely, I'm excited. I tell you what, Rich, this is really a key pivotal moment, I think, in Indianapolis. And it really brings back to light that the whole month of May is about racing and about open wheel racing, I should say, out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Joining us also is my partner in crime, Mr. Kevin Chapman, that redneck from Philly. Kevin, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Man, got all the flowers ordered for your mama?
Of course.
I tell you what, I'm 45 years old. I told my mom, I said, what do you want for Mother's Day? She said, just you, because you're perfect. That's, you know, that's the kind of mom that I have. She actually bore a perfect child. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I think every mother's
day. She's only saying that because it's Mother's Day.
Probably. Rich, are you ready for Mother's Day? You got your candy, your flowers already, and then your wife, you got stuff all set up for her, breakfast in bed or whatever?
You know what? I've got some qualifications still to take care of before tomorrow. I'm not ready. I'm not quite ready yet, but it's been a busy week. I'll be honest.
Absolutely. Well, Rich, it's exciting to have you on because I know that you're always down there at the track, and really, if anybody could give us a behind-the-scenes look, it's you. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed doing is throughout the last couple of weeks, so I went out there and watched some testing, was out there yesterday, I was out there for some practice stuff, but a lot of people don't really grasp it until they come out there and say, wow, these cars are going the wrong direction. So talk with us a little bit about the setup difference on how a car is set up differently for the road course than it is for IndyCar and how they go about preparing for that, because it is a completely different course.
Well, first of all, it is the same car, but it does have some different body work. The wings are different for a road course to allow for some more downforce and to just handle better when you're turning right and left and back and forth all the time and you're not looking for top speed. So if you take a look at the wings this weekend versus what you see starting tomorrow, they're much different. So you just have to give it a second glance and you're like, oh, okay, I see now. So the car, the chassis is the same, but they put different body work on the car, particularly on the wings front and back for a road course. Secondly, obviously, you're making right and left-hand turns, and you're coming down the main straightaway in the opposite direction. For the month of May, for years and years and years, you're going to be going, obviously, in a counterclockwise direction and coming south down the main straightaway at 16th and Georgetown, or driving south down Georgetown Road, if you will. It runs parallel to the main straightaway, whereas in this case, for the road course in the U.S. Grand Prix of Indianapolis, the cars drive north on the main straightaway before they turn into turn one into the infield, which most of us would call turn four at the speedway. I think it's been really cool to watch this, and there was nothing more cool than yesterday's wild qualifying session, where in the course of an hour or less, it did everything but snow and sleet. In warm weather conditions, we had nice conditions to start qualifying. In fact, the track record was set early in qualifying when the track was still dry. But then rain came. It was light sprinkles. And then we had two huge downpours, the second of which actually red flagged the final Fast 6 qualifying session because there was so much rain and puddles on the track. And to see those rooster tail sprays as they came down the main straightaway was just something very cool, I thought, something totally different that we've never seen from an Indy car in Indianapolis. And it really made for some entertainment, I thought, from the fact that it wasn't just a miserable day of rain. It was off and on, and you could still get out and enjoy it. And I thought it was just really cool. And I think it's fun to watch these cars on this track. And the drivers have given this track rave reviews, because maybe what people need to know more than anything is this is not the track that F1 drove. This track has been reconfigured and completely repaved to a much racier course, the drivers tell us. It's certainly a much smoother course, and a course that's going to allow for competition in terms of passing zones and making for some good road course racing. And so I think if you're going out today, and there's certainly every opportunity to do so, I don't know what kind of a crowd to expect today, but you can go out there and get a ticket, walk in the place, general admission if you don't want to sit in a particular seat, And I would actually recommend walking around to different places throughout the day, throughout all of the races, and seeing the cars take that course from different perspectives, because that's how you can really enjoy a road course. And I think it's a neat way and something different to start off the month of May. And I don't know how much excitement there is yet for this race. I know the Speedway has done a really nice job and has worked really hard to promote the race. I'm curious to see what kind of a response it gets today. But I think it will be a race that can grow, and I think it's something different and something added to the month of May. And I think it's going to be, in a long term, a good move.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm excited, very, very, very excited for this race. And, you know, I was out there yesterday as well, and it was just, and I got some video of it. We're going to get it posted up on our websites here a little bit later. But of them coming down the main straightaway, going the other direction with the, like you said, the rooster tails splashing up, that was really actually pretty cool. And everybody I was around at that time, they're like, whoa, now that's pretty awesome. So you had to have been there to experience that. Kevin Chapman, you got anything for Rich Nye on the IndyCar? I keep wanting to call the Indianapolis 500, Rich. I don't know why. What's my habit of that? The Grand Prix of Indianapolis, Kevin. Go ahead.
Well, no, Rich, I was going to ask him the question he already answered. I was curious what he thought the crowd would be like with it being the first one. And I agree that I believe that Indianapolis, the IMS, did a really good job trying to advertise it, trying to promote it for being the first one. I'm curious how many traditional Indy 500 fans are going to give the Grand Prix a shot, if that's a good way to word it.
Well, I think what they're actually shooting for is not traditional Indy 500 fans. I think they've got those people, and those people are still going to come out and do the things that they do throughout the month of May. But I think they're trying to a couple of things. One, sure, they're trying to have more bang for their buck. They're trying to get more people to come out on more days. But I think they're also trying to reach out to other people. And I think that's one thing that maybe you could question or wonder if they're reaching that goal yet. Because I had somebody who's worked at our station for years yesterday come out to the Speedway. And first of all, they didn't realize that it was the same drivers who are going to drive the Indy 500 that were driving this race. And I think there's still some confusion about which are these cars and what is this race. When you call it the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, I think people automatically start thinking this is some kind of international Formula One type series, and they're not sure that it's the IndyCar driver. Mm-hmm. So I think that's some education that has to go on to get people out there. I think also everybody who lives in Indianapolis and central Indiana or loves the Indy 500, most of those people may not be people who watch the rest of the series the rest of the year, quite honestly. They're just coming to one big racing event a year. And so I think it's important to try to get those people to check out road course racing, because ultimately that's more than half the series now. And I think they want people to see how competitively and how entertaining these cars can be on a road course. And so if they can get those people to watch this race a little bit, then maybe that helps the series throughout the season as well to understand, hey, these guys, they drive three different types of courses, and only one of those three goes in circles. The other two run on streets in cities all over the country, or they go to permanent road courses like the one in Indianapolis and others that have hills and ups and downs and twists and turns. And I think there's a lot of education that still has to go on with this race.
Well, we're talking with Rich Nye, the sports guy of WTHR local here in Indianapolis, the local NBC affiliate here in Indianapolis. And Rich, it's been around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for a long, long time, and him and Dave Calabro will do a great job out there. So certainly make sure you catch their coverage on WTHR if you cannot make it out there. Now, so certainly we've got the top 10, we've got the qualifications, we've got everything in place for today's race. Of course, Saberna Sebastian, I can't pronounce the name, I apologize, got the pole position, but we got a rookie up there, right up there in the front row, so that's pretty cool. Rich, talk with us and help us get to know Jack Hawksworth. Who is he, and what's he about?
Well, Jack Hawksworth is a rookie driver, as you say. He's from England. A lot of IndyCar drivers have come out of England. And he's driving for Brian Herta Autosport. Now, this is the team that won the Indy 500 with Dan Welvin as their driver. It's a very small operation. It's been a one-car team since its existence. But they have shown over the years that on occasion they can be quite competitive. And now, obviously, one of the big factors that happened here yesterday was the rain. And the rain, because of the rain, it made the wild card of qualifying, that maybe anybody could win it. And some guys are better in rain than others. And you're going to slip and slide, and like we saw Ryan Hunter-Reay do, to end that final 5-6 qualifying session. Things like that are just going to happen in the rain that might not happen otherwise. And so when Hunter-Reay crashed, you know, that ended the session, I think, 3 or 4 minutes early, and those last 3 or 4 minutes are when you usually see all the drivers turn their best laps. So who knows who might have won the pole, but because the qualifying session ended when it did, you know, those guys took advantage, and they're on the pole. Now, what's interesting about that front row is not only do these guys not have a lot of experience starting up front, it's the first ever pole position for Sebastian Saavedra. It's also the best starting spot ever for Jack Hawksworth, but they've got to do it from a standing start at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on a course that nobody's ever raced. So there's a lot for these young drivers to handle. Saavedra's not a rookie. I think this is maybe his third year time in the series, and he's got some experience, but he doesn't have experience to lead a race. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this standing start goes, because right behind them are a lot of guys who you would expect to be up front on these road courses, and they're going to be really eager to get around these guys. So not only is it a first-time race, but it's a standing start, which is still very new in IndyCar, to see how that goes. And if people don't understand what I'm saying, the cars won't be moving when the green flag drops. In fact, there won't be a green flag. There'll be lights going out, and when the lights go out, they take off from zero and accelerate. So it's a much different tradition there as well for Indianapolis.
Absolutely. And we're talking with Rich Nye, the sports guy from WTHR. We're a national show, but he's with the local affiliate here in Indianapolis. Now, Rich, I tell you what, in all of my talk is a lot of things, research that I do, a lot of people think that in this particular race, the winner will come kind of from the middle of the pack. And so maybe we won't say by design, because I'm sure all of these guys would have liked to have been in the front row. But that theory, I could see where that theory would come from, because you look at the middle of the pack, you see James Hinchcliffe, you see Graham Rahal, Ryan Briscoe, Joseph Newgarden, all people that could do well on a road course, and you will see some passing, unlike Formula One. So this will be some racing, especially on those long straightaways. So can we see that middle of the pack come out and come to the lead? And we see a winner like James Hinchcliffe or Joseph Newgarden.
I think you could see probably anyone in the top 10 win the race, probably. Maybe you could go 15 deep. Starting position is still very important on any road course, because no matter how many passing zones there are, it's still difficult to pass. But the drivers have all said that, as you allude to, there is opportunity to pass here, and that starting position might not be as important as it is on some road courses. I talked to Simon Pagenaud this week, who I thought probably had the best car throughout the weekend in wet and dry conditions. And I think if we had a full qualifying session yesterday, we might have seen him win the pole. But he said, you know, winning the pole here would be a nice, you know, feather in your cap, but it wouldn't really be important to necessarily winning the race. And so I think we can see passing. And the other thing you always see in road course races, and again, because they've never raced this course, there's some unknown to it, but you can always take a different strategy. And you could pit early or pit late and try to get off sequence and gain track position by pitting when others don't. And someone will do that for sure, just to try to give themselves a chance to win that they might not have otherwise. And that's a risk that somebody who is maybe in that 15 to 20 area will take, that could give them a shot to win this race today.
Kevin Chapman, redneck from Philly, any final questions for Rich before we let him go? Because I know he's got a lot going on at the track today.
No, I don't have any questions. I just want to say thank you for the expert advice. I'm definitely wanting to see this race. I'm more of a closed wheel fan, but I definitely could say that the Grand Prix has got an interest in me that necessarily the 500 doesn't. So I'm one of those fans that the Indy that the IMS probably won over for open wheel that might not go otherwise.
Well, go ahead, Rich. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say I think that's important. And one of the things that's nice about this race is it's on ABC, it's on live television, and it's at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So national eyeballs are going to, for the first time, see Indy cars driving in Indianapolis on a road course and on national live television. And that's a great amount of exposure, again, to help the series grow beyond the Indy 500. The Indy 500 can always improve, but it doesn't need the help. What needs the help is the IndyCar series.
Right.
And maybe
right.
This event on a road course, national television today, can help that.
Well, Rich, we appreciate you taking some time with us, and we're going to jump into the NFL draft conversation. So as a segue to that, and certainly I know you don't have a lot of time, but if you could just kind of talk with us about the pick that the Colts made. Obviously, they picked up Jack Muhart, offensive lineman from Ohio State, a good utility player, and, you know, he's played just about every position on the offensive line. Is he a good pick, a bad pick, or what do you expect from Jack Muhart?
Well, I think he's a great pick for the Colts' need. Obviously, we don't know if he can play in the NFL yet, but certainly for what the Colts need, they need interior linemen specifically. He's 6'6", so I have my question marks about whether a guy that tall you want at center and your quarterback has to see over him and throw over him all the time. But I'm told that he, you know, was an All-American high school center. So, and the Colts need a center more than anything, but they need interior linemen. They could use guards as well. So I think the assumption is this kid's going to be a starter at one of those three interior line spots, and that's where the Colts needed help. Second rounder, they went out and got a wide receiver. Most of all, they've got to find a safety before this draft's over.
Rich Nive, a sports guy from WGHR Sports. Rich, I look forward to catching up with you at the track. I hope you have a great weekend, a great Mother's Day. And where can people find your work, your masterpieces, stalk you on Twitter, Facebook, what have you?
The Sports Guy 13, just look at that on Twitter or other social media, Instagram, Facebook. And if you're in Central Indiana, we'll see you tonight at 7 on Channel 13 WGHR.
Thanks, Rich, and you have yourself a good weekend, sir.
Thank you. You too.
Rich Nye, the sports guy. Always a pleasure to have him on and certainly breaking down this new race out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway today. I'm super stoked about this Grand Prix of the Indianapolis. But I tell you what, the balance time clock waits for no one, and it is time to get into that draft day selection, that draft weekend conversation. And for the rest of the show, guys, it's dedicated to draft. And we've got a great lineup for you coming up next. Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, The Draft Guide 2014, that is, because he also was the author of 2013 Slant, and also from Bears Claws, to talk with us about the Chicago Bears and the overall picks with the NFL. Coming up right after him, we've got Derek Schultz of the Schultz Aquarius Show going to join us, talk with us a little bit about the Colts and their pick. And coming up at 10:30, we have Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, going to talk with us about them. So, guys, we've got your NFL covered. Stay right here on the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Mark with Sal Presidente. We'll be right back.
Johnny, go, go.
Race fans, get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at IMS.com/Carb Day.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Why would these rivals risk everything? Each is driven to be the one. IndyCar, the one to win the heart of racing.
IndyCar welcomes Verizon to the heart of racing and is proud to announce the Verizon IndyCar Series.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marcello, President. Hey, joining us is my partner in crime for the rest of the day, Mr. Kevin Chapman, that redneck from Philly, and also Jeff Kurtz. Man, it's good to have you on and talk some football. Jeff, how are you doing, sir? Are you ready for Mother's Day? Are you ready? You got all the flowers bought, all the candy bought. Are you ready?
It's been a big weekend. Good morning, Tom. Great to be back with you. Long time no talk. Yeah, a lot going on in central Indiana and nationally on the sports scene, and throw in the Mother's Day holiday, and it's just one big party.
And we've got a race here in Indianapolis this weekend too. So there's so much going on. The Pacers, of course, are headed toward, well, we hope anyway, headed toward the NBA Finals. Well, Jeff, obviously we brought you on to talk with you about draft weekend, and for those of you that don't know, Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, the 2014 NFL Draft Guide, the sequel to the 2013 Draft Guide. So, Jeff, I know you've been so busy putting together this book, The Slant, and we love it, and I know a lot of NFL teams seek your esteem advice on Draft Room, and they've got their red phone right next to you, connected to you, and say, hey, who do we go with? And you say, okay, pick these guys, and the next thing we know, we see Roger Goodell walking out to the stage. Isn't that how it goes?
maybe not quite like that. I think there's probably a little literary liberty you took there, but
sure.
It's a labor of love. It's kind of been a blur. It has been a long, drawn-out process, obviously, with the draft moved back a couple weeks to May, and I think this is just really the precursor this year. I think we'll see it move back further in years to come, unfortunately, and I think we may see each round, first, second, third, get their own night and the draft pushed to 4 days. So who knows? It was a long time coming. It's been kind of a blur. A lot of late nights. I think the teams were as ready to draft as the fans were, but it always has interest and intrigue, and this is really where you build your team for the future. And you can see some teams that kind of took a conventional route, and then those that thought kind of creatively outside the box, and some teams helped themselves in a number of different capacities this past couple of days and today as well.
Well, let's get this elephant out of the room, this big elephant out of the room, or this big elephant pile of dung out of the room, if you will. Everybody's talking about Johnny Quarterback, Johnny Manziel. I have to not very often do I follow the mainstream thinking, but I thought, you know, there's so much hype, there's so much this, there's so much that. I really thought that he would be right there in the first one or two, three picks, all the way down to what was it, like 59 or I don't know, some 20 or some number that nobody expected Johnny Manziel, and the Cleveland Browns passed him up, and then they're like, is anybody going to pick him? Well, okay, we gave you that opportunity. So he ends up with the Cleveland Browns. Are you surprised? Or why did it take Johnny Manziel so long to get drafted?
Yeah, that was the draft day drama, I think. Everyone wondering where he would land at. And I vacillated and went back and forth, much like what you stated, and I think NFL teams did as well. I think they liked Manziel. they didn't want to be the ones to pull the trigger necessarily on drafting him, though, just because they weren't totally comfortable with the sideshow and all the other stuff that that he brings with his selection. I think Cleveland liked him. I actually, in my book, projected him to Cleveland at that spot, at the 26th spot, and then they traded up to 22 with Philadelphia. So I had him going there, but in the weeks preceding the draft, I thought he would be gone in the top 10 someplace. And then the more that you were around teams and talking with individuals, again, they liked him, but they weren't necessarily totally comfortable with making the selection. And he just kept dropping. And then you have to match up, you know, who needs a quarterback as well. And that takes a certain number of teams out of the equation. I thought Dallas would have been a freak show, sideshow story, if you will, and it looked like they possibly might have taken him at their spot around 16, but then when he slipped there, you know, the possibilities dwindled, and I have to be honest with you, I kind of started to feel a little bit sorry for him because he was focused so much as part of, you know, the draft day coverage. The camera was in the green room on his every move. I think it will work out okay, actually, though. I really do. I think that he's going into a situation where the weather shouldn't be that much of a situation. He has very large hands, and when you talk about ball security at the quarterback position, really the hand size is the number one thing that teams are looking for there. So I think that if they allow him to do and run the type of offense under Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, that he did at A&M, where he could kind of freewheel, roll out, not be limited to being a pocket passer, I think he could be effective. Now, the big question always surrounding it is, what if they get out of the gate slow? What if they go on a five-game losing streak midseason and he's under pressure a lot, gets sacked, starts to get nicked up? Where will his attitude go then? Will he say, you know, this is I'm out of here and check out Melly, or will he be resilient enough to kind of fight through those things?
We're joined by Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, the 2014 Draft Guide, and also my partner in crime, Mr. Kevin Chapman, that redneck from Philly. Obviously, I know you're a diehard Eagles fan. We're going to certainly get into the Eagles and their position in the draft. But, Kevin, what do you got for Jeff regarding the NFL draft?
Well, not a whole lot. But, you know, it's fun watching ESPN right now. As soon as you were talking about the old hype, of course, LeBron James has to have himself and everything, and decide to wear a Manziel jersey on the flight to the next basketball game. But I'm glad it's over, and I felt bad for the guy as well. You know, the entire time, like you said, the camera was on him, and he kept on going down, down. Now, I was surprised he didn't go to Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville picked their quarterback more for because he's a local guy that's going to bring some people. Talent-wise, I don't think he was the best quarterback in the draft, but I don't think Cleveland's ready for what they just got. They already have issues with Gordon possibly being banned for the entire year again for failing drug tests.
Right.
So Cleveland already has issues going on with team problems, and now they just brought more media issues than I think they realize they have on their hands.
Well, they did sell 2,000 tickets since his selection, so it helped them at the box office a little bit. I thought that some of their moves were somewhat curious. They got Justin Gilbert with their first of their first-round picks at pick number 4, the cornerback from Oklahoma State, dynamic returner, long and lengthy active Coverman. I think he's a good pick. And then they followed up with Manziel. The Josh Gordon news has kind of put a damper on a little bit of the draft hoopla this weekend. I think that it's a situation where, you know, they're real rebuilding from scratch. They've really never gotten any traction there since they reformed the Browns. It's always been, you know, they went through a number of different coaches, a number of different front office staff, some ownership changes as well. So the team's been in kind of constant turmoil, so it will be interesting. And you mentioned the Blake Bortles pick of Jacksonville. Yeah, I thought that was high for him. I would have thought that if they wanted to sell tickets, they would have went the Manziel route. I don't think that he's ready to play. He has maybe the most upside of the quarterback positions, but he's extremely raw, and his throwing mechanics are all over the place. So he's going to sit likely behind Chad Henne for a year unless, you know, they fall out of contention pretty fast or Henne gets hurt. So I thought that that was a curious decision as well, and that kind of set the stage really for the rest of the first round once he was selected.
Well, we're talking with Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, the 2014 Guide to the NFL Draft. And Jeff, I'm sitting here. I'm gonna put you on the hot seat for just a moment here.
Okay.
nothing too bad. I'm really looking at your final mock draft release and comparing it to the actual results. So we'll start off with the easy one. You went ahead and went with the pick with Javon Clowney, defensive end from South Carolina, to be the number one pick overall. That is exactly what happened. So let me ask you this. What did you see in him that made you believe that he was going to be the number one pick overall?
Well, I don't think it was really much of a no-brainer. Athletically, potential-wise, he just jumped off the charts. When you look at these guys and evaluate them in terms of competitiveness, athletic ability, strength, mental, football IQ. He was the highest rated player of all the potential draftees. And if you look at then what the team's needs were, I would have thought that quarterback would have gotten more consideration for Houston. I'm stunned that they haven't selected one through the first three rounds, and apparently they're not in the sweepstakes for Ryan Mallett. But Clowney is just kind of a rare, freakish athlete. There were a lot of reasons that he did not play up to what people thought he should have last year at South Carolina. Some of them involved the scheme. Some of them involved he had an injury that was troubling him at the start of the season that kind of lingered. Some of it was probably self-motivation and trying to save himself a little bit and not get hurt. So a number of different factors, but if you just evaluate his overall play and then the potential that he has, just the freakish athletic ability, he's one of those rare athletes that haven't seen that size, that speed, that strength, the quick twitch reactions and instincts in a player in probably the last 5 years, I would say, and maybe even longer than that if I really go back and study it. So I think that he was clearly the highest rated player overall, which made him kind of a no-brainer selection. You have to get into a situation where, as the teams look at it, what is your need versus who is the best player? And if you're constantly going for who is your best need or what is your top need over who the best players are, I think that's where you get into trouble. So can you take the 10th best quarterback or the 10th player rated, which would be a quarterback, or do you have a defensive end who's rated at the top of the board? I still think you have to go with that best player because you're building the team long run, and all those things kind of work out. You can never have too much depth at any one position. So that's kind of a long-winded answer, but that's really what it boiled down to. He was clearly the dominant player in terms of athletic ability, and then what could he grow into over the next year or two? I think he'll be a dominating player in the league for the next 10 years.
Kevin Chapman, Redneck from Philly, what do you got for Jeff?
Oh, I agree. I think, you know, Houston, with picking up, which I'm torn on whether I should support Bill O'Brien going to Houston or not because he left my favorite Penn State. But, Houston was smart the way they did their draft. Now, I agree with, I'm confused on why they didn't pick up a quarterback yet. I expected one by the third round. I almost expected one in the second round, but why they haven't got one yet, I don't know. But I think Bill O'Brien has been pretty smart and building a team that when they do get a quarterback, he's put some protection in there. Which Houston might have some issues with.
Yeah, I definitely agree. He's kind of a no-nonsense, old-school, fundamental football coach. I was around him some at the Senior Bowl in Mobile in January, and he impressed me with his thoroughness, the way he went about looking at the players, talking with them, interacting with potential coaches on his staff or other coaches around the league. I just think he's a guy that gets it, and he's studied under Bill Belichick. He has that New England Patriots history and his background. I thought he did a really nice job at Penn State and, you know, some very tough circumstances where he had to take over for a legend. So they're building their team kind of around that position, and I think they think that they can supplement enough with skilled players where they can plug in a quarterback that may not be, you know, elite or top 10 in the league, but good enough to win with. And recent history has shown us in the NFL that, you know, you don't have to have an all-pro necessarily back there to succeed. So I think they've done it smart. I'm just surprised that at some point I think your quarterback of the future probably has to come early in the draft rather than later or through a veteran trade. We'll kind of see how it shakes out today. I have to be honest with you guys. I actually enjoy today rounds 4 through 7 and yesterday 2 through 3 maybe better than the first round, because I think this is where the team's general managers and their scouting staffs really earn their paycheck. Everybody
Absolutely.
Knows about the guys in the first round, but it's the next 2 days where you fill in and really get those solid core players that are going to make up your team for the next 10 years maybe that hopefully build championships.
Well, and that's, you know, and historically, you know, certainly we've got some good first-round classes in the past, but historically the meat of the sandwich, if you will, is in that special sauce, and that special sauce, if you will, comes from the scouts who really do go out there, and even though it's a little discouraging to an NFL player to get a late draft, many, many, many times the meat, if you will, from the draft and where you could gauge your draft to be successful or not, do come in these later rounds like you'll see today. We'll talk a little bit about some of the surprises, though, of the first round. Jacksonville, Blake Bortles. I mean, of course, we've already talked about Johnny Manziel, and you know, everybody kind of thought that he would end up there at Jacksonville if Houston didn't pick him up. And I think a lot of people, like you said, knew that Houston wasn't going to pick them up. So the obvious choice for Jacksonville was Johnny Manziel. And like you said, nobody really wanted to pull the trigger on him. So they decided to go with the local boy there to lead their franchise. And nobody in the NFL needs more help than the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is Blake Bortles that guy?
I think he could be down the road. I don't think he's the immediate answer. The recent history has shown us that quarterbacks get thrown in the mix a lot earlier sometimes than what it used to be. There's no longer the 4 or 5 year grooming period. Bortles has the look, if you will, size, arm strength, composure, poise, instincts. He has all that, but his mechanics are real funky. And I'll give you a case in point. If you look at 2 games last year, one against Louisville, so he played against one of the better teams in their conference, against the Louisville Cardinals, and he played very, very well in that game. And then if you forward to the end of the season, they played in the Fiesta Bowl against Baylor. The first half, Bortles looked awful. I mean, he was throwing passes sidearm, kind of not setting himself in the pocket, throwing off his back foot, all the poor mechanical issues that result in interceptions, balls batted down, poor accuracy, et cetera. And he looked anything like a first-round pick. So you've got kind of some raw skill development, like a piece of clay that you can mold, but, you know, I would not feel comfortable if I were them putting him under center at the start of the season. I think he is a project, a very talented one, but a guy that will get better down the road and has the opportunity to be the best of the quarterbacks in this class, but not initially.
Well, and I tell you what, Jeff, I think that there's a lot of clay there to work with. And, I mean, you think about it, Jacksonville, I think, really had a successful draft. I mean, first of all, they picked up their first-round quarterback, which they needed a quarterback. And then you also look at – well, I guess everybody was like, why did every team pass on Marquise Lee to the second round? Okay, so – So Jacksonville is like, okay, well, you're out there. We're going to take it. We're not stupid. So they need the clay. There's two big clay molds, if you will, that if they get put on the potter's wheel, that this could really be shaped. I don't know why we're on this ceramic pottery conversation, but we'll mold it into a beautiful pot. Hey, or we could talk about pot if you want, because it is legal in some states.
No, I'm better off sticking with the ceramic version.
Because I think there's a definite tie-in between pottery, pot, and the NFL. No, I'm just kidding. But really, no, on the serious side, Marquise Lee, I mean, everybody passed him on the first round. There he was. Jacksonville was like, we'll take him. Good fit for them. So, yeah. But why was he passed on in the first round? And do you think he is a good fit for Jacksonville?
Yeah, and that's well stated, Tom. They did do a nice job at addressing needs, whether it's long-term or in the short-term. I like Lee. I had him as a mid-first rounder, someplace between 15 and 20. I think he dropped because he had a poor senior season. A lot of inconsistency at USC. Their quarterback play since Matt Barkley left last year was not good. Additionally, Lee had an injury that nicked him up for parts of last season, so he wasn't the explosive, dynamic athlete that he had been the previous year. He's still raw a little bit in terms of his route running, and I think the combination of those things, plus at his pro day recently at USC, he did not run a very good 40 time. And we can debate and have a whole show or maybe two on the merits of 40 times and what that really means big picture-wise. There's guys that are football fast, and there are guys that are timed in a straight line fast. But he didn't time very well at that. So I think those three extenuating circumstances, underachieving senior season, whether it was his fault or inconsistent quarterback play, the injury that he had, not running well, kind of put teams a little bit on edge and thought, well, he's a good player, but maybe not worthy of a first-round pick. Where he's at, I mean, second round is certainly nothing to sneeze about. It's lower than expected, but I think that he could emerge as one of the surprises, if you will, in this year's draft class and really outplay the value of being picked there.
Oh, and I couldn't agree with you more. Redneck from Philly, Kevin Chapman. All right, Kevin, I know that you're a diehard Eagles fan, so certainly ask Jeff anything you want about the Philadelphia Eagles so that he can partake knowledge upon you, sir. And not about pot. He doesn't want to talk about pot in the Philadelphia Eagles. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, Philly, we haven't had that issue for a while in Philadelphia. But with the Texans, I think that they did a good job. Not Texans. Don't forget, they also picked up Robinson from Penn State. So they've got two good quarterbacks to help in Jacksonville. So I don't know. I mean, quarterback situation might turn out okay in the long run. They've got some help for him, but I guess we'll see where that goes. Philly, they had me worried there for a minute. When Johnny Football wasn't picked, I'm a diehard Eagles fan, and Tom knows that. But unfortunately, Philadelphia has not been, how can you word this, genius sometimes when it comes to draft picks and just moves. I am okay with the DeSean Jackson move. I have no problem with that myself, but I would give us Philly, in my opinion, a B plus for the draft. I think we did okay. We picked up Matthews to help out in the secondary as far as a wide receiver. He's not as fast as DeSean. He's not going to have the big plays like him. I think we did a good – that's a smart pick with him.
Yeah, I think they did. I would give them, if I were a grade, probably around a B. I might trend B, B minus. I thought they did a good job. I thought maybe they could have manufactured and worked their way around the draft board a little bit better than they did. But one thing about Chip Kelly – he's kind of an outside-of-the-box creative thinker, so I give him marks for looking at guys that will project in his scheme. I thought they definitely, you know, needed help at wide receiver. I think their defense also needs some attention, and I think that they were able to do a couple things there to supplement that unit. I think they had the look of the preseason NFC East favorite, no doubt about it. He's done a nice job coming in there, kind of taking over for a legend in Andy Reid and putting his stamp on that program and kind of revitalizing a little bit the fan base and the team itself that might have kind of, you know, got tired of hearing and tuned out Andy Reid's message after a period of time. So I think that I expected them to do maybe a little more with the picks that they had, but I wouldn't fault them for the direction that they went. They addressed some needs that they had, and they picked players that were worthy of those grades. So B minus, like several teams, really.
Well, my fear with them is we need defense in Philly, and we haven't addressed that yet. That, other than outside linebacker, but we our offense is powerful, but we don't have a defense that's going to stop anything right now.
We'll be interested to see. You know, the third day, there was a run on safeties in the first round. Four were picked, which is almost unheard of. Second round dominated by the wide receivers with 12 picks in a very deep wide receiver class. That was really no surprise. So third day, I would look for, again, defense, especially linemen and covermen in the secondary to dominate today's selections. There are a lot of guys that are kind of under the radar that people probably aren't that familiar with unless they happen to be a fan of that specific college football program, that will be selected today that I think have a chance to impact. And just to give you a couple guys' names, small school cornerbacks, Pierre Desir from Lindenwood, which is in Missouri outside of St. Louis. Walt Akins from Liberty is also small school, long and lengthy cover man. From a defensive end standpoint, there's a guy named Ethan Westbrooks from West Texas A&M, who I project is a late rounder. He was the MVP on the defensive side in the East-West Shrine Bowl. Is a guy who just knows how to get to the quarterback, racked up amazing sack numbers, but has some kind of off the field and has a few issues. Also racked up a bunch of offside penalties, but I like his talent. From a linebacker standpoint, there are a couple guys that are intriguing as well, a little more undersized, that could be possibilities to convert either to the deep patrol or stay at linebacker, guys that can hit and run and fast, and that's what you're looking for, traits or specific character skills that translate to what you want on the field.
We're talking with Jeff Kurtz, author of the 2014 guide, Slant, the 2014 draft guide. I am so glad that you could join us today. And also, writer for Bears Claws, and you guys talk a lot about the Chicago Bears. Let me ask you this. How is the Chicago Bears doing for you in the draft? Michael Sam, is he a good fit for the Bears?
Michael Sam, that's going to be the question that they cover on ESPN and NFL Network today. I think he is a late 6th, 7th round possibility in a 4-3 scheme. The Bears run a 4-3 scheme. Does the team want to – I think they look at the player, but in the back of their minds, and they won't say this publicly, they think about, can we handle the situation with the extra media scrutiny? I think he'll be selected 6th or 7th round today and has an opportunity. He's a pass rush specialist and a guy who's really going to have to carve out a role on special teams and as a third down rusher to make it in the league for a period of time. As far as the Bears go, I like their first round pick, Kyle Fuller, cornerback for Virginia Tech. Second round, they went with a junior, Ego Ferguson, defensive tackle from LSU, really raw around the edges, developing player. They're betting on his upside. I think that was a little bit of a reach. And then in the third round, they took defensive tackle Will Sutton from Arizona State, two-time Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, played really out of shape, heavy last year, gained a bunch of weight, wasn't as effective. But at the Senior Bowl, he had dropped some weight and looked to be back to his old self. I think he's got a possibility to play right away.
Well, you picked Cody Landmeyer, wide receiver from Indiana. We'll talk about him because he's an Indiana boy. You wanted him to go at where you thought that he would end up at Kansas City. He ended up at the Broncos as a guy that's going to be catching passes, or at some point he hopes, from Peyton Manning. He's got to be happy about that. But why did you think Kansas City?
Well, there was a lot of buzz that they wanted somebody to pair with Dwayne Bowe. Dwayne Bowe on the other side is a big physical receiver, but has had some off-field indiscretions that have, and his motor doesn't always run high. So he's been taken out off the field a couple times through various issues. I thought they might want to pair Bowe with a big physical receiver like Cody Latimer, and it seemed like a spot where the Chiefs needed some more dynamic firepower. They were kind of limited in their passing game last year. Actually, he was a fast riser. You know, first round might have been too rich for him, but I think he has to be ecstatic with the situation, the way it worked out, you know, going to Denver, a team that was in the Super Bowl, playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't think it could have worked out better for him. I just kind of felt bad. He was invited to New York, so he was one of the last guys in the green room, if you will, that had to kind of wait and hear his name introduced. But I think he's a very mature guy, and, you know, he was really the best player for IU. And I can't find a lot of fault with his game other than he just needs to develop his route running skills, and he'll drop a ball every once in a while that he should catch. But I think he'll make a pretty fast impact there and have a nice career. I think he's one of the best IU players to come out in the pro ranks in quite some time.
All right, Jeff, I tell you what, we really appreciate you joining us today. Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, the 2014 NFL Draft Guide. Make sure you get your copy. I got a copy. If you don't have a copy, well, you cannot have an intelligent conversation with anybody about the NFL without The Slant. So to make sure that doesn't happen, Jeff, how do people get your book?
Well, I appreciate the plug. You can go to Slant, The Slant Draft Guide. That's all one word, theslantdraftguide.com, and the details are on there.
Pretty easy. See, theslantdraftguide.com. Go in there. Make sure you have your credit card ready, but that's okay. Jeff's not in it for the money, so he's not going to take your mortgage payment. It's really, really inexpensive. And Jeff, after this, I want to talk to you about becoming your pitch man. How's that sound? Yeah, I love having you on, and you're certainly welcome here on the show. And certainly as we get deeper into the NFL season, we'll have you on again. Any predictions? As far as at the end of the day of the draft, you could look back and you could say that was exactly as I planned or not as I planned. Anything in that mix that you'd like to share with us?
It's all kind of a blur after the moment. I think you look at the teams who had the most picks. For example, a San Francisco who's done very nicely with 11 picks and the choices they've made so far. And you look at the trends where, you know, there's still a lot of good quarterbacks on the board that is somewhat surprising. So I think you look at those two things. You look at guys that maybe did not get selected at all that you thought were better and should have been picked. And then the scramble starts for the undrafted free agents. And believe it or not, probably by the end of the month, all these teams will assemble again in their own respective offices, and they'll start to plot the top seniors on the board for next year. So it's kind of a never-ending cycle, and that's kind of what makes it fun and intriguing. But at the same time, you know, you're kind of drained by the whole process. But it's really where your team, the foundation for your team, comes alive. And if they do a nice job, then they can be competitive for the next 5 years. And if they do a poor job, then sometimes that takes 10 years to recover from the mistakes. So those are kind of the overarching themes, but always enjoy being on with you guys. Appreciate it. Have a great
weekend. Absolutely. Jeff, you have yourself a great weekend as well. Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant, the 2014 Draft Guide, really giving us an in-depth look about the behind-the-scenes and what the NFL teams look at and what the scouts look at when they put together their draft board. Well, wait no further. Coming up next, Derek Schultz of the Schultz and Query Show, local 1260 AM, going to be breaking down that number huge, big pick from the Colts. We're talking about that. We're talking about the Colts and the impact, and, of course, the NFL draft. We got Derek Schultz next right here on the Balance Radio Network.
To play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go. Go, Johnny, go. Go.
The echoes. The legends. The hearts and souls of champions. All will take notice as a new tradition ignites. The inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis. New twists. New turns. New thrills. Grand Prix of Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our story begins now.
Race fans, get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day Concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbles. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/carb day.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
All right, welcome back to the Balance, hour number two. And we have got the whole hour dedicated to the NFL draft. And I tell you, I know our next guest is on the way out to the track. I'm going to be going out to the track as soon as this show's over. They got some sort of crazy rules. They won't let me do my show out there. I don't know. But they're big party poopers out there. I'm just kidding. A great time out at the track. We've got a big race today, the Indianapolis Grand Prix. But joining us from the Schultz and Query Show, 1260 AM local here in Indianapolis, to talk with us about the new Colts pick in the NFL draft on his way out there to the track is Derek Schultz. Derek, how are you doing, sir? Are you ready for Mother's Day? You got the flowers and candy for Mama? You got yourself all set up?
I sent him away. It's been a long time since I've been able to actually be there for Mother's Day, which is kind of a bummer. I've missed about 10 straight Father's Days, too. But I always make sure I know exactly how long the mail carrier takes to get from Indianapolis to Connecticut. So I've got that on lockdown.
That's the Mother's Day. Hey, you know what? I've got a great Mother's Day for you. I'm going to give you a trip to get away from me. I'm just kidding with you.
Yeah.
Derek, we appreciate you joining us, and I know you're headed out there to the track, and a lot going on here in Indianapolis, but I want to talk with you, and also our partner in crime, that redneck from Philly, Mr. Kevin Chapman, but we want to talk with you about the Colts and their pick, and they're picking up that guy from Ohio State. I don't think anybody really expected that we were going to have an exciting draft. This was just not our draft year, and, you know, obviously we weren't going to pick up Johnny Manziel or anything like that. Apparently nobody else was either. And Cleve was like, okay, I'll take him. But let's break down this pick from the Indianapolis Colts. And a pretty strong guy, a big guy. I talked with Rich Nye from WTHR a little bit earlier, and he was talking about he's a little bit concerned about a guy that big be it playing a position of center, if you will.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, the funny thing is that you talk about, well, the Colts aren't going to have a sexy draft. Well, no team that's not taking a quarterback is going to have a sexy draft because the quarterback is a sexy position. Unless you're in play for Manziel or Bortles or Bridgewater or Derek Carr or Garoppolo or one of those guys, then your fans are going to be let down because what's the Colts' biggest need? It's interior offensive linemen. There's not a less sexy position than interior offensive line. So you figured that they were going to go down that road because there was just so much need there. They were banged up, and they really just had guys last year in Mike McGlinn and Samson Tutelli that I don't think were NFL-caliber starters. So I'm not sure if Jack Muhart is going to be a starter right off the bat, and I'm not even sure what position he's going to start at because he played tackle at Ohio State, but he was a very productive player and a guy that some people felt like the Colts maybe reached for was more of a third-round or even a fourth-round guy, but clearly they must have really liked him to grab him at 58, 59, wherever they were there in the second round. The encouraging thing is that he played center in high school and was actually listed by Rivals back 4 years ago as one of the top centers in prep centers in the country. Then he went to Ohio State, beefed up a little bit, moved over to guard, and then even got to the point where he was playing tackle. So he's regularly played tackle the last couple of years, but can also play guard and at least has some semblance of experience at center. So this is a guy that Ryan Grigson really likes because he can be versatile, he can move across the line, and you add into that mix Donald Thomas, who blew out his knee in the second week of the season last year. The reason why the Colts wanted to bring him in is because he could play multiple positions on the line. So it's a good problem to have. It's sort of like having a switch hitter, or I'm trying to think of an equivalent in basketball, like a George Hill type, where he can run your offense as the point guard, but he can also be the off guard. He's a combo guard. That's sort of what they view Muhart as, and they want their entire offensive line to be guys that could fit in at different spots because the Colts are pretty well set at tackle with Chehalis and Costanzo. So really it's just the interior, the two guard spots, and especially center where they desperately needed some help.
Well, absolutely. And certainly, you know, this, I don't want to call him a kid. I mean, he's 6'6", 302 pounds, and I'm not going to be the guy to call him a kid. But we'll call him a kid because he's fresh out of college. And I think that is a good pick for the Colts as far as I don't know if Jack Muhart would have been the guy that would have been the guy that anybody would have said, okay, that's the Colts. But like you said, they weren't in a position for a sexy pick, and it wasn't sexy, but it gave them meat, which is exactly what the Colts need. Kevin, in the redneck from Philly, what do you got for Derek Schultz of the Schultz Inquiry Show, sir?
No, I agree. Unfortunately, your linemen, number one, they're sexy, and offensive and defensive line has absolutely nowhere to go. No business being in the same sentence as big as those boys are. But when you go that route, which the Colts were smart, they went a route they needed, it's not going to be all the hype. But I think we did well. I don't think it was a bad choice. Time will tell whether his beefed-up size will be a hindrance or a positive. Only time will tell all that. But I think it was a smart choice.
Hey, go ahead, Derek. I thought you were going to say something. I apologize. Well, Jack Muhart of Ohio State, certainly, and as Derek alluded to, a great utility player, which can move around if needed. And so what is in store for Jack Muhart as far as, okay, he gets a call from Brian, welcome to the team. Now let's get to work. Here's the playbook, or let's give him some time to get adjusted. Let's see what he does in camp before we sign him. What's the plan with the Colts and Jack Muhart? Sorry.
Well, the plan is if you use a second-round pick and the Colts' first pick this year on an interior offensive lineman, you expect that person to start.
Okay.
This isn't somebody that they're taking a flyer on. This is somebody that they want to come in and win the job in camp. Now, they'll probably have an open competition for that spot with whoever else is going to be in the mix on the roster. A couple of guys that I mentioned, Satelli and Mike McGlinn, obviously are no longer on the team, but they'll bring in some other guys as well to be in that mix to compete with him, and they'll bring him along slowly and help him learn the playbook and things like that. But you don't draft a guard, a guy that you expect to play guard or a guy that you expect to play center in the second round without the expectation of him starting. That's why you make that kind of investment. A second-round pick is a huge investment in today's NFL. So I think they fully expect him to be the opening day starter in week one, and if that means throwing him into the fire so be it. But I would expect the lineup to be at the guard spot, probably Thornton at one of those spots. He was a draft pick last year. And then I'm assuming Newhart is going to be the other one. And then maybe Donald Thomas is your starting center. I think your starting line next year in week one, when they open up the season in Denver, is going to be Costanzo and Chehrilis as the two tackles, left guard, right guard, and Newhart and Thornton, and then Donald Thomas is your starting center. I think that is the hope and the vision of Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano.
Well, certainly, and as you mentioned, when you draft a guard, if you will, from in the second round, it's expected you're going to come in and go to work, and that's what they're hired to do. They're hired to be a workhorse. I mean, I think a lot of people gave some grief to Ryan Grigson online and on the social media world, and because certainly that's what matters is Ryan Grigson sitting around monitoring his tweet. Feed, if you will, on make sure that he made the right decision for the Indianapolis Colts, because we all know so much better than Ryan Grigson. But he was hired to be a workhorse. He's going to be a workhorse. So if you are Muhort, I'm going to learn how to say that. If you're Muhort and you get the call from Ryan, he says, okay, you know what, you're going to go to work. Here's the playbook. Get to work. Get ready. What does he do mentally and physically to get ready to play for one of the greatest teams in the NFL?
Well, I think it's the same as any expectation for any offensive lineman. It's just to learn the playbook, know where you're supposed to go, and protect number 12, right? That's what Jim Irsay tweets about all the time, protect luck. I don't think there's any special set of circumstances for Muhort compared to any of the other offensive linemen or really any of the other position players. The Colts have built a nice culture for themselves. It's the same kind of culture that you have when you join the Steelers, or the same kind of culture you have when you join the Packers or the Giants or any one of these teams that we've seen over the last 10, 15 years be consistently strong and consistently contend for playoff bursts and division championships and even Super Bowls. So I don't think that it changes just because he happens to be an interior offensive lineman, whereas the Colts have invested heavily in the past, recent history, in skill position players as they've reworked and rebuilt this roster.
Well, one other guy the Colts picked up, maybe it's worth noting about, is Dante Moncrief out of Ole Miss. Thoughts on him? Again, big guy, workhorse, hired to do a job. And certainly I think that he will do a great job. He's fast, he's quick, he's big. He's everything that the Colts need. Who's a better pick, Moncrief or Muhort?
A lot of people believe that it's Moncrief because he wasn't expected to fall that far. So the Colts got more value, if you will, out of taking him late in the third round. But I'd be lying to you, Tom, if I said that I watched a lot of Ole Miss football in the past couple of years. I don't think any of us have watched a lot of Ole Miss football, maybe ever, much less the past couple of years. But he actually has drawn a lot of comparisons to – this guy's been in the news for the wrong reasons here recently, but he's drawn a lot of comparisons to Josh Gordon of Cleveland. And Gordon, outside of his off-the-field problems, which have been well-documented, he might not even play this season due to a second failed drug test. He's a playmaker. He's a game breaker. The ball gets in his hands, and he can be a home run hitter. Reach for any cliche that you want for playmaker, and that's apparently what they're giving Moncrief. He had a little bit of problems with drops at Ole Miss, but he's a big target. He's a really athletic kid, and I think that he is being drafted not necessarily for his impact this year, because the Colts are pretty well set at 1, 2, and 3 at wide receiver with Hilton, Wayne, and Nix if those three guys are healthy. But I think this is a pick not for the now, but for the future, because Reggie Wayne's in the last year of his contract. Hakeem Nix is on a one-year deal. And then suddenly, a year from right now, the Colts might be facing the same conundrum that they have, where who are we going to have at wide receiver? So this, I think, is more of a pick for – he can contribute right away, don't get me wrong, and he's going to play and he's going to contribute. But I think this was a pick more for the future, whereas Muhort was a guy, hey, we need you to start right now. Moncrief is a guy that we really like you, and we envision you being our number two receiver with T.Y. Hilton for the next 5, 6, 7 years past this year.
Derek Schultz of the Schultz Aquarius Show, 1260 AM, right here in local Indianapolis. on his way out to the track if he's not already there. And I will catch up with you at the track a little bit later on. But let's talk about the track. You're at the track, at Indianapolis Grand Prix. The Indy cars are going the wrong direction. It's the road course. Exciting time for races, not only for IndyCar, but their developmental series, you know, in the Mazda series and Indy Light series in both of their second races today. So big race, racing out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. What are your thoughts on this Indianapolis Grand Prix?
Well, my first thought is I did a two-seater last week, and I can't imagine doing that for 100 laps because I did
so
two laps, and I felt like I was going to throw up immediately afterwards. It is a lot of – I've done the oval before, and the oval is pretty self-explanatory, right? Four turns, and you're just going in a circle. This thing, you're going 170 down the main straightaway, then you're slowing down to 50 miles an hour around the turn, and then you're going left, you're going right, back, forth. It is – it's crazy. So I'm actually really looking forward to the first experience that I think a lot of Indianapolis fans have with watching a live road course race. But I don't know how much it's registering nationally. They said that they wanted 40,000 fans out there. I heard those projections are going to be a little bit low. But I'd like to think that there's some excitement about this because you've got this great road course back there, and it's just been kind of rotting away over the past couple of years. F1 left 5, 6, 7 years ago. The only other series that uses it at all is the MotoGP for the motorcycle race. So I think it was cool of the IMS to decide, hey, you know what, we're going to dump a couple million dollars to update this course, get it all paid, get it looking nice, and have a true kickoff for the month of May. So I think locally it's registering and people are excited about it and people are genuinely interested in what this is going to look like. But from a national standpoint, the NFL draft getting pushed back 2 weeks into this week, the Pacers in the middle of a playoff run, it's going to be tough for it to register. Month of May used to mean everything, and it's just not going to be 1978 ever again in Indianapolis, and I think people are starting to realize that. But that doesn't mean that today can't be a great event and a great official kickoff of the month of May.
Oh, absolutely. And again, it's not the Indianapolis 500. I did run into some people from Milwaukee yesterday. They said that they would come. They're going to be at this race. They're going to go home, and then they'll come back to this race. So maybe if they're within reasonable driving distance, they'll do both races. But we'll see if they have 40,000 people out there. Derek Schultz of the Schultz Aquari Show, appreciate your time today helping us break down the Indianapolis Colts. And we certainly look forward to having you on again in the future. I hope you enjoy your Mother's Day time off, a day at the track, sir. But certainly, what's going on the Schultz Aquari Show this week?
Well, we're going to try to, this is what we do after every Colts draft, we try to get in contact with all of their new players and get them on the show, kind of a getting to know you sort of a thing. Also, we're going to be at the Firestone Garage at the track all week. It's 500 practice starts immediately on Monday. So we're kicking off the month of May at the track Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 3 to 7. Firestone Garage, you can't miss it. It's right at the entrance of Gasoline Alley. If you are at the track all that week, please come by and say hello. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year doing the show from the world's greatest race course.
Well, I tell you what, you have the world's greatest race course, the world's greatest radio sports talk show next to mine, because you run every day. I run on Saturday. So, you know, I am honored to have the greatest sports talk show host in the greatest show around.
I look at it as 1A, 1B.
There you go. There you go. We're all winners. Derek, you have yourself a good day out the track. Hopefully I'll catch up with you out there. And have yourself a good Mother's Day weekend, sir.
Sounds great, Tom. All the same to you. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Derek Schultz of the Schultz Aquari Show. I enjoy having him on. He's just a lot of fun to have on, and a lot of good insight there, Kevin. Well, we got about 5 minutes where you and I can just sit back and breathe, if you will. Yeah, I was gonna go. We were gonna go to a break, and so yeah, let's. I'm not going. We're gonna hold off on that just so that we can keep our time clock straight. So, Kevin and I, you and I, we got 5 minutes, man. We're gonna talk about whatever we want for 5 minutes. Heck, I could talk for 5 minutes and not even take a breath. So that's easy time to cover, you know. But what do you think so far, man? I mean, we've been going out at full speed,
Going out.
Yeah, we've been for the lack of better terms, a packed show.
A packed show. Where are you at right now, sir?
Oh, I'm at the house right now.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought maybe that you're getting breakfast, you're going to the track. Are you going out to the track later?
Oh no, that's what I figured. When we get down here, we'll talk about that.
Going to the track, man.
Well, yeah.
I was out there.
Go ahead.
Unfortunately,
the Roberts Camera Shop still has my camera. 2 days ago, I went down taking some photos down at the art museum, and I took two pictures, and now I won't do anything.
Roberts Camera Shop. Let's give them free plug. A free plug. Free falling. So, all right, Kevin, so we got racing out of the track. We've talked about the Colts picks. Let's talk about the Pacers real quickly. Pacers, as Derek alluded to, are in a big run for the what we would hope to be the NBA Finals against the Wizards. Great game last night, by the way. Pacers fell out a win. What are your thoughts about these Indianapolis Pacers, these Indiana Pacers?
Well, if the first game we played like the second half of the season, now these last two games we've played like the team we were in the beginning of the season. So, you know, if they can continue playing the way they are right now, which they obviously have potential to play this way, you know, for 14 games and get to the NBA championship, but the question is, will they do that? And, you know, Hibbert now has two games back-to-back with double digits in scoring, which has been a miracle so far for this playoff season for him to do that. But I don't know. My fear is I think we'll pull it out against Washington, but then we're going to have a Miami Heat team that is going to be winning in 4 to 5 games and getting rest before they come here to Indy.
No, I'm excited. If we could make it to the NBA Finals, it would be awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what's even more awesome. It's the fact that I'm awesome. What's even more awesome is the fact that I'm actually awesome. And we're getting ready to take an awesome commercial break. If we get back, we're going to have an awesome Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, because it's draft weekend. It's race weekend. It's Mother's Day weekend. I really don't know a better combination out there, Kevin.
Well, I agree. And considering he's a beat writer for Philly, I mean, well, that right there explains the awesome, the greatness that he's bringing to us.
All right, guys, we'll be right back. My name's Tom Mark with El Presidente. We'll be back with Ed Kratz, Calkins Media beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's draft weekend, it's race weekend, it's Mother's Day weekend. It's just an awesome weekend here on the Balance Radio Network.
Get ready for the 2014 Coors Light Carb Day Concert at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, starring the Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, and the Wobbo. And Sublime with Rome. Friday, May 23rd, Sammy Hagar and the Wobbo. And Sublime with Rome. Get more info at ims.com/carb day.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
You know, after a long day here at the Balance Radio Studios, one of the things I like to do most is just to sit back, relax, and enjoy a nice cigar and a great cocktail. One of my favorite places to do that is Mr. B's Cigar Box in Avon, Indiana. Mike and Tom have the setup for you there. I'm going to tell you what, they've got a walk-in humidor, cigars, pipes, tobacco, the way you like it. You like it mild, they got it for you. You like it strong and bold, they got something for you. They got a fully stocked bar with local drafts, a very relaxing lounge, a full-service kitchen with a delicious menu, monthly cigar tasting events. You can play Golden Tee for free. Bring your laptop, relax with a nice cigar and the cocktail the way you like it. Mr. B's Cigar Box in Avon, Indiana. Mr. B's Cigar Box is the place you want to go to unwind. Mr. B's Cigar Box in Avon, Indiana. Very easy to find. 8123 East U.S. Highway 36 in Avon, Indiana. That's 8123 East U.S. Highway 36 in Avon, Indiana. 317-272-6900. The guys out at Mr. B's Cigar Box are waiting for you. What are you waiting for?
The Echoes. The Legends. The hearts and souls of champions. All will take notice as a new tradition ignites. The inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis. New twists. New turns. New thrills. Grand Prix of Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our story begins now.
Here we go. Blue 20!
Football. Catch the fever.
The sport of kings.
And now let's talk some football. All right, welcome back to The Balance. The last half hour, we have had a jam-packed show for you today. We have been going at it full speed. It is Mother's Day weekend. It is race day weekend here in Indianapolis. And a lot of people, I know we're a national show, is like, well, it's not the Indianapolis 500. No, we have the first Indianapolis Grand Prix, the IndyCars on the road course, a brand new road course. We had Rich Nye from WTHR Sports, the NBC affiliate here, joining us and talking with us about that. I was out at the track yesterday. I've been out at the track a lot this month. I'm going to be there again today, and I'm going to be there throughout the rest of the month. Practically, that's where I'm going to live outside of my own home, is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But I tell you what, something else, other than the NBA Finals, something else huge is going on in the world of sports, and we have dedicated this entire show, outside of the first part for racing, we've dedicated the entire show to the NFL draft. We've had Jeff Kurtz, of the author of The Slant, the 2014 guide to the draft. We've had Derek Schultz of the Schultz Aquarius Show on, talk with us about the Colts pick. But I tell you what, nothing gets any better than our next guest, Ed Kratz, Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are coming to Indianapolis. Ed's coming to Indianapolis. The Balance and Ed, we're all going to go out. All I want to know is Ed, do you have your attorney on retainer?
Yeah, his name's Jack Daniels.
That's right, Dr. Jack, baby, Dr. Jack.
Happy Mother's Day to you guys. Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, do you have the flowers and the candy all set up for Mama? We asked Derek Schultz of the Schultz Aquarius Show just now what he's doing special for his wife or his mom. He said, I sent him away. I sent him back home to Connecticut for the weekend, and he's going to go to the racetrack. So I tell you what, I think that's a win-win-win for everybody. She gets to go home and spend time with her mom in Connecticut. That's fair. And she gets to spend time with her kids. That's fair. And he's not a mom, so he gets to spend time out at the track. To me, Ed, that's a great setup there, huh?
Absolutely. I will be spending time with my wife tomorrow, though, and my kids. I've been away for these last 3 days to cover this draft here in Philadelphia, so I haven't seen them a whole lot, so I'm going to do that. Well, I won't get chocolates because chocolates don't last very long around me.
Me either.
So it would be a half a box. I would end up giving a half a box to whoever I gave it to. So I go with flour, typically.
Absolutely. And I certainly want to say a special thanks, a happy Mother's Day to my mother as well. She's actually leaving Indianapolis now and headed back to Evansville, which is about 3 hours south of down in south there. But unfortunately, my grandmother, her mother, passed away. And so we had to family funerals and stuff to deal with on this Mother's Day. So it's bright, though. It's a good thing. And you know, it was our funerals are never fun, right? But my grandmother passed away. But happy Mother's Day to my mother as well. And let's get into this draft talk. I tell you what, the Eagles, maybe not sexy picks, as we just talked about with the Colts, and maybe not sexy picks, but their picks get the job done. So we'll start with you, Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles with Calkins Media. Talk with us about the Eagles and their draft and how it all come together. And I tell you what, Johnny Manziel hung out. We joked about it on text earlier this week about Johnny Manziel coming to the Eagles, but the longer he sat out there, we thought, well, maybe this could actually be a reality. So go ahead, talk with us about, just give us what you think is has gone on with the Eagles and what were they thinking?
Yeah, well, first, my condolences to your grandmother there.
Thank you.
But, yeah, the draft, you know, I got to be honest, I'm a little underwhelmed with what the Eagles have done so far. Johnny Manziel was sitting there at number 22. He really started to slide, and you thought, you know, Chip had talked during the week that, you know, he loved Manziel when he was at Oregon. He tried to recruit him to come to Oregon, and, of course, he lost that recruiting battle to Texas A&M, and Chip said that, you know, when Manziel made that decision, he broke his heart. So you think, all right, well, maybe the Eagles might take him. And then, you know, it comes their turn on the clock, and they don't take him. They trade down with the Browns, and then the Browns grab him and asked about it afterward. Chip, you know, he kind of validated his quarterback group. You know, there's always been that question in Philadelphia, is Nick Foles really the guy? See, you know, because there's so many questions, is he the guy that runs Chip Kelly's offense? You know, because he likes a more mobile quarterback. He likes to run that read option. So this really validated Nick Foles, and to a lesser extent, I guess, Mark Sanchez, who they signed as a free agent, and Matt Barkley, who they drafted with the first pick in the fourth round last year. So they were happy with their quarterback group, and that validates Foles as the guy that, he's going to run the offense. So, but then they trade back, and they get this this project, really, from Louisville, Marcus Smith. You know, they need pass rushers, clearly, and pass rushers are hard to find. I think they made a little bit of a reach. There was some talk that he could have been had a little bit later, and maybe that's true. But as I think Bill Belichick said last night when they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round, that, you know, you'd rather, you know, it pays to be early rather than late when you want a kid. So, you know, that's a pretty good philosophy, and maybe that makes sense with Marcus Smith. But, you know, to me, he's a project who, you know, maybe his ceiling is pretty high, but he's not going to hit that ceiling for another 2 or 3 years if he does at all. So, and then the Eagles come back yesterday in the second round and the third round, and they make a couple more trades, and they're wheeling and dealing, and they get the two receivers. I like the Jordan Matthews pick from Vanderbilt. I think he's a terrific receiver. You know, he had a career reception leader and yard leader in the Southeastern Conference, which that's, you know, one of the best conferences in football, and he pretty much did it without a marquee quarterback. You know, Vanderbilt, if you can name who their quarterback's been the last couple of years, you know, congratulations. I don't know who it was. But anyway, he had a terrific career there and emerged as the leader in the Southeast Conference in receptions and yards. I think Chip wants to play him in the slot, which is a little different than what most NFL teams do in the slot. They usually like to put a littler guy in the slot. A smaller guy, Chip said, we're going to start him in the slot. He's a bigger guy. He's almost 6'4", and he goes, and we'll see how teams match up with him in the slot. He's very fast, and he's very tall. And then on the outside, of course, you have Riley Cooper, who's 6'5", and Jeremy Maclin, who's 6'. So, you know, I think that was a huge upgrade to pick Jordan Matthews. And then they come back, and they take a kid from Oregon, who Chip loves, Josh Huff, another receiver, who, to me, you know, he seems like more just of a special teams guy. you know, a guy that can return kicks. And, you know, I know special teams is a big emphasis for the Eagles and Chip Kelly, but to me it just seemed like, you know, couldn't they have gotten someone a little better as a receiver? And you know, maybe he'll be okay. He's 5'11", 206 pounds, another kid you can put in the slot. But to me, you know, I think there were some better players and better receivers on the board at that time. And, you know, I think they need defensive line help. And Lewis Nix was sitting there last night when they decided to trade out of the 83rd pick overall, which they had gotten from the Browns, to move back in the first round. And they went away from Lewis Nix. And, you know, to me, there's some work to be done today in this final four rounds that they have. What is it, three rounds, four, five, six, say, four rounds. The Eagles have four picks. They have the first pick again today in the fourth round after trading out. So they're going to be on the clock here in about another hour and 15 minutes, and we'll see who they take. But there's still some work to be done, in my opinion. They still need to find a cornerback to bring some depth. I think they need defensive line help, and, you know, their offensive line isn't getting any younger, and, you know, it would certainly be nice to maybe get an offensive lineman here, too, as the draft goes on. But, you know, you talk about the Eagles coming to Indianapolis on September 15th, Monday Night Football. It's going to be a blast. And,
yeah, baby.
The Colts better have somebody to match up with these receivers, because even without Deshaun Jackson, I think the Eagles receivers are going to be a handful for a lot of teams in the league.
Hey, the Colts just picked up a pretty good workhorse, that's for sure. Joining us also, the redneck from Philly, as we like to call him, a guy you never want to leave your phone laying on the table and walk away for any reason. Inside joke there. But, Kevin, you've been waiting. You've been biting at the chomp here to get Ed on the line here and help him understand your Philadelphia Eagles. It's like they got a good pick. No, they don't. Got a good pick. No, they don't. Let's trade. Oh, we got somebody now good. Or are we going to keep them? Kevin, what do you got for Ed?
Well, we joked, like you said, about the Johnny Football, but I have to say, I was sweating there for a little bit, their first round. And I would have been I'm a huge Eagles fan. I'll always be. But I will say I would have been highly disappointed if we went that route. I agree with solidifying Nick Foles, our starting quarterback. You know, everybody doubted his fit in the Chip Kelly scheme. Personally, I like his fit. I think he's a good quarterback for us. I have to agree with the draft concept. I'm not real sure of. We got two wide receivers, but they both need size. They're both small guys compared to what they need to be to play up in the NFL, especially in the Chip Kelly scheme there. And I hope in four or five, we got first pick of both rounds. We need defense. We need some secondary. I was hoping we would go more that route than we have.
Yeah, well, you know, Jordan Matthews is almost 6'4". He's not a little guy. I mean, and that's the
bulk-wise.
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting when Kelly, after they picked Matthews, Kelly raved about the fact that, A, he's 6'4", and, B, is able to get open against man coverage, which to me, in my opinion, was two reasons why, you know, they cut Deshaun Jackson. You know, Deshaun Jackson is only 5'10", and Deshaun Jackson really, really struggled a lot against man coverage. And the Eagles faced a lot of man coverage defense, and Deshaun Jackson, for some reason, has a hard time getting open against man coverage. Now, he can get deep and beat a guy with his speed, but, you know, to get open and you know, in a man situation, Jackson really struggled there. So when Kelly said that about Matthews, you know, his ability to beat man coverage and his size, that to me indicates that he wants bigger guys to play that position. And, you know, they have no receivers now that are under 6 feet. You know, and Matthews being 6'4", that's a handful. I think the fans are going to really like Jordan Matthews. In fact, I think if you would have picked Jordan Matthews in the first round and Marcus Smith in the second round, fans would have loved it. But there's a lot of fans around here that are very disappointed with that first pick, Marcus Smith. But I think Jordan Matthews is a terrific consolation prize in the second round. Now, that third-round pick, I'm not real sure about Josh Huff. I think that was kind of a reach, you know, to go for a, quote, special teams player that early. To me, just kind of max of some favoritism towards Oregon players with Chip Kelly.
Ed Kraft, of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. Ed, I'm going to put you on the hot seat here. I know that maybe you don't really, you can't get into the minds, you're not in the war room per se, but I guess you talked about a lot of fans were disappointed with the first round pick of the Philadelphia Eagles, justifiably so. And the guy in a lot of mock drafts, and my mock draft here at The Balance, I had Coney Ellie, who ended up going with Carolina, going to you guys in your first round. Why did you pass him up and let Carolina pick him up?
Well, I think Coney Ellie is not a scheme fit for the Eagles. You know, he plays – you know, Missouri was big on that 4-3, and I think he's viewed as more of a defensive end type. And I think the Eagles were looking for more of the outside linebacker slash defensive end, a guy that can drop into coverage as well as rush the passer when called on. And Marcus Smith said that he dropped into coverage about 50% of his plays at Louisville last year. And he did pretty well in space. You know, he needs to set a better edge against the run. But, you know, he was a second leading sacker in the nation last year at 14.5 sacks, and you know, you can say what you want about the competition that Louisville played against in the former Big East Conference, whatever they call it now. It's hard to keep track of some of these conferences the way they change so often. But I think Coney Ealy was just viewed as really not a scheme fit type player, and you know, you hear a lot about that with Chip Kelly and his team. Is does the player fit schematically what they want to do? And you know, they had some players that they just take off their board who were good players, like the Coney Ealy, who they just deem as not a system fit. So, you know, Ealy was really never in the mix or in the conversation. And I thought maybe that's why they went away from Lewis Nix last night, was maybe they just viewed him as a non-scheme fit. But, you know, I asked Chip about that after they drafted Huff, and he said, no, he would have been a perfect fit for our scheme. But for some reason, they didn't take him, and I don't quite understand why they didn't take him, but you know, maybe I'll get to the bottom of it here, you know, moving forward here in the next few days as the draft
In my opinion, of course, it is what it is. It's just an opinion. I'm just a sports guy in Indianapolis that talks sports and probably drinks too much beer, so maybe my opinion doesn't count. It's amazing how many experts we have out there on social media, and I know Chip Kelly is just monitoring his Twitter feed. It's just, dang it, I should have got him. So, I mean, I understand they've got their reasons, but I guarantee you, and this is just, again, my guarantees, for take it for what it's worth, when Philadelphia plays Carolina, Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles are going to say, don't. And that's just, but you know what? A lot of people can say what they want about Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles. But you guys, you did get Smith, you got wide receiver Matthews, of course Josh Huff, and so certainly, I wouldn't say that you had a bad draft so far. You know, some areas. And I've always said in my mock drafts and things that I do, I always cater to the weakness. You guys need a quarterback. Who are you going to get?
Cornerback.
I'm sorry, Ed. One quick question. Cornerback, who are you going to get? Is Kerry Williams your guy?
Well, he is right now. You know, I think Kerry Williams brings an edge a little bit to the defense, you know, with his attitude. You know, whether skill-wise he's exactly what they want, I don't think so. I mean, he had an okay year last year, and you can say the same about Bradley Fletcher on the other side. But I think these are going to be your starters. And I think the reason the Eagles haven't drafted a cornerback yet is because they signed one in free agency from the Dolphins, Nolan Carroll. So, you know, this draft so far to me, despite all the talk about taking the best player available, no matter what position he plays, I think this draft has been more about going for needs. You know, they need a pass rusher, so maybe they reach a little bit and hope Marcus Smith can become that. They needed wide receivers because they lost DeSean Jackson and Jason Avant, and they go out and, you know, they pick two receivers back-to-back. So, you know, they do need a cornerback. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to grab one. I know they like this Pierre Desir, who I believe is still out there, the Division II kid from Lindenwood. Chip talked last night about possibly drafting a kid now that he's injured. I thought maybe he was referring to Brandon Thomas from Clemson, the really good guard that tore his ACL during the off-season, you know, scouting stuff. Maybe it was at the Combine or the Senior Bowl. I don't remember. But the 49ers took him with their 100th pick overall, Brandon Thomas, which was a terrific pick. I mean, even if he doesn't play this year, he'll be fine the following year. But, you know, Aaron Colvin is still out there, who was considered a very good cornerback before he tore his ACL. And, you know, Chip said that there's talk in their room right now about taking perhaps an injured-type player who, you know, maybe you can get a redshirt year out of him. And, you know, maybe Aaron Colvin will be that guy with their first pick today, or maybe later on if he's still available. But I would expect to see him take a corner for sure. They do need a corner. I don't think Terry Williams is, you know, he might be that guy this year, but, you know, he's certainly not at that level that I think you need to be at to win a Super Bowl. We'll see. We'll see if they draft a corner, a depth type of corner. I think they need a D tackle. And again, like I said, I think they need some offensive line help to start looking toward the future, because this line is not getting any younger either. Listen, you're not going to fill all your holes. You can look at every team and, you know, do you have 22 perfect players out there? No. Every team's got a weakness at some position. So it's difficult to do. And, you do the best you can with the resources that you're given, that the NFL gives you.
Kevin Chapman, redneck from Philly. Kevin, what do you got for Ed Kratz, Philadelphia Eagles? Good draft, bad draft. What are your thoughts, sir?
Well, and I said this earlier, I give us B+, B+. I don't think you could say Philadelphia is the elite of the draft this year. I think Chip Kelly's smart. I don't think he flies by the seat of his pants. So I have faith that the decisions they did make, they have the reasons. I mean, we just got a defensive end. I know he's been, in the Army for 4 years, but when he played for West Point, he was really good. I don't know. I think we got, like I said, B+. I do look forward to, and yes, I live in Indianapolis, and yes, I'm right when I say this, and Indianapolis fans will argue with me on this, but I feel bad for the Colts, because their first game at home, Monday Night Football, and they're going to lose. I'm just saying. I mean, Philly could come in, and we're Nick Foles is going to show Andrew Luck some things.
Well, we're all going to hang out here in down at the Colts Grill in downtown. I whenever Ed gets to town, we're all going to hang out and have dinner and we will discuss this in great detail but I have a feeling that I've got numbers on my side, especially when we're down there at the Colts Grill. But that's okay. You can wear your Philly jersey, Kevin, because nobody's gonna kick your ass here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. They might Philadelphia if you wore a Colts jersey, but not here in Indianapolis. Ed, you talked about filling all the holes. I've always wanted to say that on my show, fill all the holes, but what holes do you fill? But when you look at the holes that do need filled, I mean, I talked a little bit about your cornerback. Of course, your issue with safety, there's not a lot to pick from there. Offensive line, three of your starters are on the other side of 30. So you need some help there. Defensive line, it's all about depth, and I don't know that you have a lot of depth there, so maybe you go for somebody on the defensive. You need a kicker. So, I mean, you have a lot of holes to fill, and you guys have got some good picks, and like you said, you can't pick everybody. So, I'm not trying to say the Eagles suck. I'm just trying to expose the holes, if you will. So what holes do you fill, Ed?
Well, you can't fill them all. I mean, it's just, impossible to do. So, safety is going to be an issue unless Earl Wolf, their second-year safety from NC State, who was playing pretty well last year until he got hurt and missed 7 games with a knee injury. You hope he steps forward. They're pretty high on Nate Allen, who was a second-round pick back in the 2010 draft, who really has never fulfilled that potential, but they brought him back on a one-year deal. Now, interestingly, this will be the first time in his Eagles career that he'll return to the team and he'll have the same system and the same coaches in place. He's never had that before. which could be viewed as a disadvantage. So, you know, I think they're counting on him perhaps in his second year in this system to step forward. Earl Wolfe, they're pretty high on. They signed Malcolm Jenkins from the Saints in free agency. They're very high on him. So, you know, you have a couple. Howie Roseman, the Eagles GM, said leading into the draft that he wasn't really impressed with the safeties in this group outside of Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor, who, you know, both those guys were gone by the time the Eagles made the pick. So, you know, that's going to be one of those holes that they're just going to have to kind of hope Wolf and Allen can step up. You mentioned kicker. You know, Alex Henry was a fourth-round pick, struggled last year a little bit. I fully expect them to bring in somebody to compete with him once the free agency period begins, I guess, Sunday. And that's going to be an interesting time for teams also across the NFL, Tom. Is, you know, once the draft is over, they can start bringing players in. And this was viewed as such a deep group of prospects. There's going to be some players, I think, if teams do their homework, that, you know, you're going to find some diamonds in the rough here once that free agency period for these rookie undrafted players hits, you know, Sunday morning or whenever they can begin signing guys. You know, so you got to pay attention to that too. You know, defensive line, the Eagles have some players. Whether they're actually scheme fits because they were incumbent players when Andy Reid was still here remains to be seen. Guys like Brandon Graham, Vinnie Curry, Fletcher Cox even, who was the number one pick a couple years ago, is still learning to play a different technique in this scheme. So, you know, I would think that they would try to find a guy on their defensive line that is more scheme-oriented. They like Damian Square, who was an undrafted rookie free agent from Alabama. He's another guy on that line. But, yeah, they need somebody that, you know, on that D line, I think. And when you look at their loss to the Saints in the playoffs last year, the Saints just ran all over them. You know, the Eagles were geared up to stop Breeze in the pass, and, you know, they handed the ball off. And, you know, to Darren Sproles, who's with the Eagles now, and Pierre Thomas, and, you know, that group of running backs they have there. So they weren't able to stop it. They like Benny Logan, who was a third-round pick last year from LSU. They hope he steps up and has, you know, a good transition year from his first year to his second year. So they have some players. I think there's a little bit of a hole there, though, for Phil. And offensive line, you mentioned, the three guys that are south of 30. They're good, but they're old, and, you know, they were all healthy last year. Their offensive line was healthy, and it was a very good offensive line. But can you count on another year, players being older, another fully healthy year? If luck is with you, yeah. And I don't mean Andrew Luck, but
I was going to say, luck is with us, actually.
No, if you have good fortune, you know, then they do. But you need to have some guys, some depth there on that offensive line. And I know Alan Barbary is one guy they like who was depth player for them last year. So, you know, he's one. But, you know, and K-Town Kevin there, Kutztown Kevin, he mentioned the U.S. Ranger they signed, Alejandro Villanueva. But what a great story that kid is. I mean, I can't wait for the rookie draft or the rookie camp to begin next week so I can talk to this guy. He'll be easy to pick out. He's 6'9". But, you know, he has a list of accomplishments and medals that he won as a U.S. Army Ranger that, you know, would fill up a half a page of type on a
sure.
page. I mean, he's won the Medal of Valor, for crying out loud. I mean, this guy is just beyond football. I don't expect that he'll make the team. I think Chip Kelly and the way he thinks outside the box, he wanted to bring in a U.S. Army Ranger because, let's face it, nobody knows how to condition mentally and physically like a U.S. Army Ranger or a Navy SEAL or any of those types of, you know, warriors that we have fighting for our country better. So I think Chip wants him to kind of come in, teach these guys how to prepare themselves mentally and physically. I think that's the role he's going to serve. I'm not sure he makes it through August with this team, but, you know, he might surprise, but I think his value is just being a Ranger and teaching that toughness mentally and physically.
Well, I couldn't say it better. And, you know, my hat's off to all the soldiers out there, and especially to Chip Kelly, if nothing else, just giving him an opportunity, if you will. Well, guys, that's going to do it. We're about out of time here. It's race day. It's time to get down to the track. But, Mr. Ed Kratz, where can people find your work, your masterpieces, stalk you on Twitter, what have you?
Well, you can hit me on Twitter, KRACZE, or you can follow me, you can look at my work at www.intel.com, and you can / Eagles, and you'll find all the writing I do. And it's been a lot these last few days. I'm a little tired, but there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, get some rest. Have a good Mother's Day weekend, sir. And we'll catch up with you again soon, most definitely, as we get closer to the start of the season.
All right. Awesome, guys. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too. Ed Kratz, Calkins Media. That's going to do it for us for today, guys. We've had a jam-packed show. Kevin Chapman, Redneck from Philly. Thanks for jumping in the co-pilot seat today with me, sir. We're going to probably head out to the track. So where can people stalk you on Twitter? Oops, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry about that, Kevin.
It's, on Twitter, it's Philly Country Boy. It's, but the country spelled different. So it's PHILLYCNTRY Boy.
Country Boy! All right, man.
That's right.
All right, man. Well, we're going to get out to the track here soon. We'll talk to you in a bit. Kevin Chapman, Redneck from Philly, jumping in the co-pilot seat today. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Going out to the track today. Be safe. Know your zones. If you know what I'm talking about, go to IMS.com and know your zones. Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. Stay safe out there. I'll see you guys on Thursday for the Hot Corner right here on the Balance Radio Network. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. I'll see you. I'm out of here. Peace.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.